back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we start our second hour. And we've got to talk some more wagering. And joining us now, like he does at this time every Friday afternoon, it's Bruce Marshall.
Joining the guys every Friday is college football historian and Vegas legend Bruce Marshall from Vegas Insiders, CBS Sports, and his own website, BamSports.net. With over 30 years on Memphis radio, with handicapping and sports talk, here's Bruce Marshall with Bryant and Brett.
Bruce Marshall joins us now to talk all things wagering. A lot to get to for the weekend, but Bruce, let's start in the NBA. Two really important games tonight. One at 6 o'clock. We'll start with that one. Pistons and Cavaliers. This one in Cleveland. Right now, Cleveland, a 4.5-point favorite. The total, 210.5. What do you like in this one?
I like Cleveland, Brian. You know, Cleveland's pattern in the postseason, it's been who's ever at home. But that was broken in Cleveland's favor in Game 5 the other night. In the game, it looked like both teams sort of wanted to lose at certain points. But Cleveland did make the breakthrough, and they have not lost at home this season. When James Harden doesn't turn the ball over that much, he can be he's option 1B. And you've got 1A with Mitchell. So you've got two guys who can be, go-to threats. And I'm not sure Detroit has more than one. They've got one in Cade Cunningham. But, I mean, it's sometimes you wonder about him so much on his shoulders there. Mm-hmm. Charles Barkley even said this the other night. He doesn't know if there's a player in the NBA who has more on his shoulders than Cunningham. He might be right there. I've been a little disturbed by his own turnover problems, too, and that's been recurring for him. He's had 24 turnovers the last four games, so that's a little bit too much. I think Detroit's in trouble. I know they rallied in the first round against Orlando from 3-1, so they were looking at the abyss of elimination. Three times they won, but that's different. Orlando was without Wagner late in that series. They ended up firing their coach after they blew that lead in that series. This is a much different animal. I don't think they survived tonight. I think that Cleveland gets them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've talked a lot about it, Bruce. I think the biggest thing for Detroit is just their inexperience. It is showing that 60 wins, it can cut both ways. Yeah, it was great. It got you that seed. But did it really test you? Were you really ready for that crucible of playoff elimination like they faced tonight? In this Detroit team, in my opinion, I want your opinion on it, I don't think it stacks up with the Piston championship teams that we know. It's not close to the Bad Boys, and I don't think it's close to Billups and Hamilton. And even those teams, we know Bad Boys, they had to get tested. They had to have laps around the track. They had to watch other teams celebrate, and they ended up being motivation for Michael Jordan and the Bulls watching them celebrate.
You're right on all of that, and I almost thought this year, I give Detroit credit, they've come a long way. I mean, this is the worst team in the league a couple of years ago, and Cunningham's better than I thought he was ever going to be. But I think they were sort of a product this year of just the overall weakness in the East. Mm-hmm. They really ran up a lot of wins against the bottom half of that conference, and there was a lot of teams in the bottom half of that conference this year. It was that 60 wins is just a little bit deceiving. And Cleveland, since the Harden acquisition, that did change some things for Cleveland, and that made them a little bit more dangerous. And so I kind of agree with you there. I'm not ready to, anoint Detroit. I thought they were fortunate. I don't think they'd get out of the first round if Wagner doesn't get hurt. And Orlando had them on the ropes. So this is one of the, weaker one seeds I remember. Yeah. Recent years, and I think I think this thing ends tonight.
And I didn't think Orlando would get out of the play-in, and they did, and really threatened Detroit in that first round. Bruce, we talk a lot about the ring culture, the championship culture, you being the winner, a culture that we're in, and players and coaches are defined by it. It may get overdone. It may be a weakness in sports talk radio that we so easily go to that. But basketball, the basketball players, they really get the label. I think quarterbacks get it in the NFL. And then in baseball, not as much. There are a couple, unbelievably, Carl Yastrzemski, Ted Williams, Ernie Banks, Ferguson Jenkins. They were never on World Series winners. Barry Bonds was never on a World Series winner. The basketball guys, they really catch the heat, though. Is it because of the small number that, there's only five out there at a time?
Yeah, that's part of it, I think. Yeah, and, we've had a similar sort of a group contending, although I think we got seven straight years now. We've had different champs in the NBA, so mm-hmm. they have been spreading it around a little bit. But, until you win one of those, you've got to, you're going to carry that label around. And, the Pistons, and because they were such a loser for a while, they're this, like we said, worst team, in the league a couple of years ago. They're going to have to, win one of these to really, shed that. And I don't think they're ready yet. And maybe next year, but this year, I don't think so. And they would be even if they survive this series, the Knicks are going to be a significant favorite over either of these teams in the conference finals. So I just don't think Detroit's getting all the way this year.
Who is that great player that never won one, and he gets that around him, that millstone?
There's several could be there. I mean, you could say Elgin Baylor. You could say Patrick Ewing.
That's two good ones.
Pros.
you came out of the gate strong.
Yeah, he did. But Ewing never got there.
I think he was not great. But this week, the passing of Craig Morton, and I'm certainly not speaking ill of the deceased, but that Super Bowl V, those interceptions, that labeled him forever, and then he wasn't very good for the Broncos against the Cowboys.
Right. And, he didn't do much better in Super Bowl XII either, when they had to pull him for Norris Weiss, the Ole Miss quarterback.
Yeah.
In the second half. So, yeah, you gotta once you win one of these, it's sort of – in the NFL, you've got some too. Fred Tarkenton never won a championship. He's in the Hall of Fame. That's going to be a discussion for some of these NFL quarterbacks too, Phillip Rivers and some of them. Is he going to get in the Hall in a couple of years? Well, he never won a championship, but I think he maybe deserves to get in. But yeah, in hoops though, there's a lot being made of, finally winning it. And, until you do, you got that label.
And people forget the Craig Morton years in between Dallas and Denver. It was bad for the Giants.
Yeah, he got traded in mid-74, and his first game, I think, with the Giants was against Dallas, and they beat them. But it was a tough go. And those were the years the Giants played a season and a half up at Yale. So he played the last half of 74. Their home games were at Yale.
The uniforms
were bad.
In 75,
they actually played at Shea Stadium, believe it or not. So they were revamping Yankee Stadium where they left, and then they hadn't finished the Meadowlands yet until 76. So that was a tough time to be a Giant quarterback. You had three different stadiums, three years where your home was, and it was a tough time for Morton and the whole Giants team.
Yeah. The second game tonight, Spurs and Timberwolves, kind of the exact opposite of that first game where the Cavs are at home looking to close it out. In this one, Spurs on the road looking to close it out, and they are a 5.5-point favorite on the road against the Timberwolves, total 218.5. What do you like here?
Yeah, I'll go San Antonio World here. I think Minnesota's taken this about as far as it can go. They have been destroyed twice in this series. Game one was sort of a flash knockdown. Edwards played. They weren't expecting him to play. And I thought just kind of caught San Antonio flat-footed in game one. And I think this series might have been over already had Wemby not been ejected from game four for that elbow he threw at Naz Reid. And he's actually fortunate he didn't get suspended for game five, because that could have carried a one-game suspension, and then this whole series would have been different. But, he's obviously the defining element here. He's in the four games where he has played the whole way, or at least didn't get ejected like he did in game four. He's had at least 15 rebounds in every game. He one game he had 12 block shots. Another game he had 27 points. Another game he had 39 points. Minnesota cannot deal with him. And on the other side, they need and Wemby. I mean, he's also. I mean, assists. That's the theme. I think Mitch Johnson's got to be thrilled. Now these guys are sharing the ball. He had three guys with at least five assists in the game five romp, and Wemby and Castle and Fox. So they're sharing the ball, and everything is clicking, and I think this is as far as Minnesota goes. They would need a big effort from Edwards. I'm not sure he's up to it. He only scored 20. That's good, but not in the 30s like he was last week at home at Minnesota. They're going to need a big effort from him and somebody else to step up, and Julius Randle steps up here. McDaniels he's been standing over out in the corner too much. Get mid-range. Take a few mid-range shots. You might find some higher percentage looks than just sitting in the corner all the time waiting for a clear look on the baseline three. I think Minnesota's in trouble tonight.
I'm going to cross currents here. More beleaguered sports town. The Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, back to 91 last championship, are Buffalo with the Sabres facing elimination.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Because
Minnesota's
at least got the Twins that have won in recent memory, and Buffalo doesn't. Sabres have never won it. They got in the final a couple times. They still never won it. The Bills, you got to go back to the AFL days for them. So Buffalo, I think, might win the beleaguered award. Minnesota not far behind, the Twin Cities. But Buffalo ain't going to win it this year either. I don't think they're getting – I think they're going out tomorrow night against the Canadiens. So, they hadn't even made the playoffs in like 14 years. So this is just a big deal making the playoffs for the Sabres. But I don't think they're going to – I think they're going out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Bruce, I'm going to show my – true ignorance here, and it also comes off as ugly American.
Oh.
Why for the team nickname, they spell Canadiens, and at the end, that is an E, instead of like for the country people, you would say Canadiens, and it would be two A's in it?
That's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. I do know up in...
Did I sound like an ugly American? I didn't mean to.
No, yeah, I actually don't know the answer to that. I do know, though, up in Montreal... They are called Les Habitants, the inhabitants. So that's when they say Habs, H-A-B-S, Les Habitants. And if you're up in Montreal and you go to a game at the Bell Center up there, that's Les Habitants. So that's how they say it up there.
Would that spelling of Canadiens, would that have anything to do with more of the French persuasion in Montreal?
I don't know. It's possible.
I don't know either.
I don't know either, but it's a question I've often. I should actually, now that you bring it up, I think I'm going to check that out myself after we're off the air.
I was thinking of you last night watching the schedule release. 32 NFL teams now. I mean, just, you know, everybody's got one. I mean, there's a team really close by everywhere now. Bruce, the NFL I first remember, I'm going to say 69 or 70, right around the merger. How many teams was it then, 16 or 18?
The NFL was a 16-team league, and the AFL was a 10 when they merged. So there were 26 at the merger. There were 28 in 76 when Tampa Bay and Seattle joined. And then we were 20 years before we got Carolina and Jacksonville. But it was 26.
So everybody got dragged through the merger from the AFL and nobody got left behind?
Right. That's only the ABA and the WHA. They left a few behind.
Yeah.
AFL took them all.
We got left behind in the ABA.
Mm. Yeah.
Some got left in the ABA and some in the World Hockey Association, too. But
technically,
AFL, they all came.
Technically, ABA Memphis had already moved to Baltimore and was going to be the Baltimore Claws, but I don't think ever played, and they got left behind.
Yeah, that last ABA year, they're by the end of the league, I think there were only seven teams that year that were left, because some folded. There was a team that the Claws folded after preseason. San Diego had the Conquistadors, became the Sails. They folded. In fact, it's funny, when I was a senior in high school that year, We were going to go down and watch the Sales play because the Nets were going to come in town, and we wanted to see Dr. J. We're all excited about it, and then we heard like you know, that morning or whatever, that the sails had folded. So
they sailed on.
That is crazy. Talking to Bruce Marshall, he joins us every single Friday talking wagering. Over in Major League Baseball, it's Rivalry Weekend, as they are calling it. Anything that jumps out to you on tonight's slate?
Yeah, I'm going to give Tampa Bay a shot here. It's not a bad price of Schultz on the mound. Now, it's another one of their sort of openers there, though he goes a little bit longer. Kevin Cash has a lot of different options here, and he's used the opener better than anybody in recent years, but Schultz has given him a few more innings, so he could go as many as five tonight. But they've been so good lately, and it was just it was odd that they lost that game in extra innings to the Blue Jays when Varsho hit the grand slam in the 10th on Wednesday. But Tampa Bay has still won 16 of 19. They're 14-4 at home. I mentioned Schultz tonight, and usually the bullpen has been great here, and the pitching has been really good the last 3 weeks. And they get Miami coming in, and Miami's had all sorts of trouble on the road. Yunk goes tonight on the mound for them. He hasn't been that bad, but this has been the Sunshine State rivalry has been pretty much Tampa Bay dominated. It's not a bad price for the Rays tonight. I would go with them. By the way, big news in Tampa Bay. They're going ahead with the stadium, it looks like. Right by the Bucs Stadium. That's where I always thought should have built.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it puts like Orlando.
Right by the airport. You almost land on top of
the airport, yeah. And it's going to be very close to actually where, you know, they played last year when the Yankees, their spring training.
Yeah, it's Steinbrenner Field
is right across from the Bucs Stadium, but they're going to build there, so by 28, they think they're going to be in there. So that's one tonight, and it's all of these. Yeah, it's the rivalry weekend, a lot of interleague. The Battle of the Buckeye State, in about an hour or so, they're starting the Reds and the Guardians. We got Abbott and Bibee. The Reds just had a pretty high-scoring series with Washington, but that's sort of – Washington gets involved in lots of hitting, not much pitching. Cleveland does not get involved in those sorts of games. And Bibee had his best effort of the season, his last start. Abbott has pitched well. After a slow start for him, he's been really good. His last two starts hasn't even allowed a run. Total is about 8. I think that's too high, so I might look under. Reds Guardians in the Battle of the Buckeye State tonight in Cleveland.
I was telling Bryant earlier, I thought with the advent of interleague play, it was the end of time. It was the pure devil's workshop. I love it now. I don't mind it at all. It's a little much, but I've enjoyed watching it through the years and going and see the New York Yankees at Busch Stadium.
It is. I've loved it, and now it's like there used to be just when they first started it, in the late '90s. There were specific, weekends where they would have the interleague, and it would always be like all at once. Now there's interleague play going on at least one series, at least every night or every week. So I like it now. It's now part of the fabric, and I think it's good for everybody.
Bruce, if you're Zach Kleiman, you're the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies, and the first two picks have come and gone, and DeBansa is off the board, and Peterson's off the board. Who do you take with the three, and will you do a mock draft?
Probably Cam Boozer.
Yeah,
I would take. I think that's probably where they're going. Although, let me point something out here. I mean, all this tanking that these teams did, so this is what they're doing it for. This is what Washington did for. And Washington's made bad anyway this year. But DeBansa, his team didn't get above 500 in the Big 12 this year. And they didn't get out of the first round of the Big Dance. So you're telling me this is the guy you're going to – he's not Wemby. He's not a franchise player.
He's not Magic Johnson.
He's not Magic Johnson. He's not Michael Jordan. I mean, he's not Hakeem Olajuwon. And you're tanking for these guys here. Peterson's year, I mean, a lot of people thought Kansas was a better team when he didn't play. So I'm not sure, that's the other thing about this tanking. That's the insanity, because I don't think this draft, they say it's a good draft, but is it a, transformational players? I don't see it. But having said that, if Memphis has a third pick, and those two guys go 1-2 like we think, I would think Boozer probably goes to Memphis.
Yeah, I think that is the way it is trending right now. But, Bruce, before we let you go, where can we find more of you?
Yeah, thanks. Check me out online. Now, everything's under the WagerTalk.com umbrella now. All my picks are there, GoldSheet.com. That'll be towards football season. We'll start doing some more stuff there. But also winners and winners, picks and parlays.com. It's all under the wagertalk.com umbrella and wagertalk. You can also get my picks up there.
Bruce, enjoy
have
the weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Okay, have a good week, boys. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce Marshall with us every Friday from the Gold Sheet. Our friend Chuck Galena sends me this. The Montreal Canadiens are spelled with an N's, Canadians. Rather than ends, Canadiens, mm-hmm. because the team name is in French, mm-hmm. reflecting the team's francophone heritage and location in Quebec.
How about this? It's an unwritten rule. General manager, head coach, have to be bilingual. You have to be French in coaching, though. You have to speak both languages. They will not accept someone that just speaks English.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I know. It definitely makes sense.
To deal with the
absolutely.
Movers and shakers around
absolutely.
Town, promotions,
yeah.
and your fans.
Exactly.
Your
and so, yeah, because I knew I'd always heard of there's one Canadian hockey team that has that kind of quirky little unwritten rule, and I looked it up, and I found someone asking about it, and someone said the last time we – this was a fan talking – the last time we had an English coach, there were people protesting outside the Bell Center. The French media is far more powerful here in QC, and without their support, it becomes a PR nightmare for any English-speaking coach. So you got to be both. You got to have both.
And, and sometimes we make a mistake with people thinking mm-hmm. that they might be from one country to another. Jack Buck always told this great story, and he could speak fluent Spanish to deal with the large influx of Latin American players, yeah. Spanish speaking players, mm-hmm. and the Cardinals trade for Veda Pinson from the Reds to the Cardinals, mm-hmm. and in spring training he goes up and in his best Spanish says, "Hi, my name is Jack Buck. I'm the voice of the Cardinals. Welcome to the franchise." This is all in Spanish. "Welcome to the franchise. Anything I can do for you, please let me please feel free to reach out and help me." And Veda Pinson backed up. He goes, "Wow, the Spanish. I'm from Oakland, California." And he was born in Memphis, Veda Pinson
was. Oh, wow. How about that?
And Jack Buck just wrongly stereotyped.
Yeah, wow.
What's with all the Spanish?
That is hilarious. Yeah, so it is, different places, different things, and it gets kind of weird up there.
So Victor Wembanyama could be
That's exactly right.
That's he could be coach of the Canadians.
He could be coach of the Canadians. He would fit right in up there. I don't know how much hockey he knows, but if he's a third as good of coaching hockey as he is a basketball player, he'd be fine. He could easily do the job. But it would be weird to see Victor Wembanyama coaching hockey, standing back there, a giant back there on the bench, telling, "All right, your shift, get out there." That would be something. I think Spurs get a win tonight.
Really dumb question here on hockey.
Please, I don't promise I can answer it. I have a buddy who's a big hockey guy, and he was giving it to me yesterday. He was listening and heard you call me hockey expert, and he was kind of giving it to
me.
Well, on this show, I am.
Would you ever? This is really dumb. This shows my ignorance. Would you ever start the game and put the pressure on them by pulling the goalie and just try to rack up a big lead early?
You know, Brett,
I
think it would be dumb.
Good time to break.
I don't think – I kind of like it. I kind of don't hate it. Just get an extra skater out
there. It's how little I know about it.
I don't hate it. Maybe try to apply the pressure. The problem is it would just be – I would feel like if you did it 10 times, I feel like 7 out of the 10 times you'd go down early to an empty netter. So it probably would be pretty dumb to start it. But I kind of like you're wearing your creative
put
cap.
Put pressure on.
I don't hate it. Last night, last night, the Anaheim game got out of hand, and it was 5-1. There was 8 minutes left in the game, and Anaheim had pulled their goal. We're not playing for anything else. Let's just try to get an extra skater out there. And
you know who loves Vegas moving on and potentially getting to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Who's that?
all the NHL media.
Oh, they definitely do. They absolutely do. But let's go ahead and get to another break. When we return, the weekend is here for the Preakness. We'll break it down. Dick Girardi, he joins us next.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you, and we gotta talk the Preakness. Dick Girardi joining us now, and
a real treat.
It really is a treat. Before we get to the Preakness, I do want to go back to the Kentucky Derby. Golden Tempo wins it. Obviously, we're going to talk about Golden Tempo not racing in the Preakness, but just the Kentucky Derby itself, the underdog story, the way that it played out, your thoughts of the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, look, I love the game for two reasons, right? The stories and the gambling. The story turned out great, the gambling not so great, at least for me. But yeah, you gotta love the fact that Cherie DeVoe won it, first ever female trainer to win the Derby. And she's paid her dues big time. She got into the game really at Churchill as an exercise rider 20 years ago, working for a guy named Chuck Simon, and then worked her way up and has been a lead trainer for 8 years now and just keeps getting better and better horses and does a great job with it. So love that part of it. Certainly the race was exciting. I mean, the horse went 25 lengths back on the first turn. The only downside for me was I made a large, and I do mean a large, wager on the non-bourbon. I bought a car on Tuesday. I was trying to pay for half of it on Saturday. And I thought I had it won when they came into the stretch, and I kind of thought something had gone wrong with the horse. I didn't know exactly what. Then they announced on Tuesday he ended up with a chipped knee fracture, and that's clearly why he finished fifth. I think he was going to win and win easy.
Well, Dick, that's why they have financing plans.
Well, I guess so.
Exactly.
and that's why they call it gaming. But,
no question.
but it was a great race. It was still crowded, even with the scratches, and a lot of the great storylines. And then once again, no Golden Tempo to run in the second leg, and we're not at Pimlico. There's just a lot of things around tomorrow that a super race may not even bail out tomorrow.
Yeah, look, disappointing. It's the third time in 5 years. Obviously, last year with Sovereignty. No problem with what Cherie is doing. She's never run any of her horses back in 2 weeks. It's really, guys, the schedule, we've talked about it. They need to move it to 4 weeks, and she certainly would have run Golden Tempo if this race was 2 weeks from Saturday. So just the schedule needs to change and deal with the modern thoroughbreds. And, yeah, I mean, look, you always want to see the Derby winner there. NBC wants to see it. We want to see it, the fans, everybody does. But I do understand where Cherie's coming from. The horse has never run that close. It was 6 weeks from the Louisiana Derby to the Kentucky Derby, and the most important thing is the health of her horse and what she thinks is best for him. So I do get it, but it certainly will take something away from the Preakness tomorrow, there's no doubt.
Are we going to get that flex in the scheduling eventually?
I think we're going to get it next year for a couple of reasons. One, we're going back to Pimlico, and we're also going back to the new Belmont Park, right? So we'll be back to a mile and a half at the Belmont. So let's go back to not only a mile and 3/16, but at Pimlico, the new Pimlico. And we have NBC's contract is up with the Preakness after this year. Look, they pay a rights fee. Mm-hmm. It's not worth as much without the Derby winner, right? So they're going to want the Derby winner there. The Belmont Park is going to want a better shot at a Triple Crown, which they obviously don't have this year. So I think hopefully the TV networks, the two racetracks will get together and find a way to make this happen. To me, it's 4 weeks and then 4 weeks. I think you get much more participation. It would be better for the sport, and it would reflect the changes in the sport, where people don't run their horses that often anymore, and it's the biggest event we have in horse racing. Let's find a way to make it as good as it can possibly be.
Dick, I thought when we talked about it, the production, the presentation, the bigness of how NBC treated Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby, I hope it's the same rollout tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know if they, you know, and keep in mind, it's first time at Laurel, so they've never been there before. So it's a totally, they've got a whole different setup. They were used to Pimlico for years and years. I know they'll do a great job because they always do. Now, they don't have the Belmont. Fox has the Belmont. And the Derby is one of the biggest productions they do all year. So I don't know. It's not on as long, but they'll certainly do the race justice. They always have. They have great talent. They have a great production team, great director. They know what they're doing at NBC. They know how to deal with big events, for sure.
Dick, in the 80s, I would go to harness racing in Laurel. Is it the same track?
Yeah, it's right down the street, the old Laurel Raceway. It was then called Free State, but literally maybe a mile down Route 1 in Laurel. And for people who don't know where Laurel is, it's 25 minutes south of Pimlico, which is in northwest Baltimore, and about 10 miles north of Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and even a few miles closer to the University of Maryland and College Park.
Yeah, I mean, you could ride the Green Line practically to it.
Absolutely. No question.
And I did. And nothing like a cold beer and a hot dog.
How about that?
There you go.
And betting on harness racing.
I love it. Well, Dick, who are the horses to know tomorrow?
So I think this is, in my mind, even a more complicated endeavor than the Derby. I saw the Derby. I actually saw it exactly how it played out, except, unfortunately, the non-bourbon did not get to the finish line in front. I wasn't seeing Golden Tempo, but I did see a lot of that race. This, to me, is a little harder to visualize because very few of these horses were in the major prep races. We don't have all those major prep race winners. I think we had more form. So this is 14 horses without a lot of consistency or a lot of form. I will not be betting any car payments on this one. The one thing I will be betting on, in fact, my biggest bet tomorrow, one of the great props at betonline.ag is over under on the time for the Preakness. And the over under is a minute 55. I cannot tell you how much I love the over in this. I do not think these horses are fast enough. The racetrack itself, the surface is much slower than what we saw at Churchill Downs. And here's the big difference between Laurel and Pimlico. Laurel is a mile and eighth circumference, where Pimlico is a 1 mile. They'll start this race at the 16th pole. The run to the first turn will be a lot shorter than what we see in the Preakness normally or in the Derby. And when you have fewer straightaway time, that means the time is automatically going to be slower. Obviously, horses run slower around turns than on straightaways. So over 155 is my bet of the day tomorrow.
I like that. Any of the horses that you maybe not love but kind of like tomorrow?
Yeah, Iron Honor is my pick, mostly because of the connections. Chad Brown, Flavian Pratt, the best trainer-jockey duo in the country. And this is kind of a repeating a pattern for Brown, who's won two Preaknesses recently. And he won them the same way. He had horses that ran okay in the Wood Memorial and then came back past the Derby. They came back to win the Preakness, so he's trying to repeat that pattern. This is a talented horse. He just didn't run so well in the Wood Memorial, but his other two races are fine. He's probably about going to be maybe around 5-1. We only have three horses coming back to the Derby. Look, I thought O'Selly ran great. I don't know how it happened, but it happened at 70-1. And Incredibolt, who was sixth in the Derby, beating four lengths, he'll be back as well. And of the new players, a couple of Taj Mahal, who's the local horse, 3-3, all at Laurel, where he trains. So he's got the home track advantage. And I mean, you'll love this horse. The hell he did. The number 7. I think he's got a chance to be a very good horse. Now, whether it's going to show up tomorrow or down the road, he has a half-brother named Senior Buscador, who won the Saudi Cup a few years ago, $20 million race. So I think the pedigree is there. Now, whether it's going to happen tomorrow or not, I don't know. But that he's kind of the hell we do is kind of my long-shot pick for the day.
Dick Girardi with us. Always thanks to the great people at betonline.ag. You mentioned a prop you liked. Here's one I like it at betonline.ag. Will Ortiz brothers finish in first and second? Yes is 25-1.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, how about that? And of course they finished 1-2 in the Derby. You know, one of them was the favorite. The other one was obviously a long shot that Jose won with. But yeah, Renegade second is the favorite. So you have Jose on Chip Honcho for Steve Asmussen, is won the Preakness twice with two Hall of Famers, Curlin and Rachel Alexandra. And Irad is riding Talkin'. He was a horse who had a lot of promise as a 2-year-old. Just hasn't quite happened at 3. But yeah, either way, it's like a quinella. It doesn't matter which way they finish 1-2, you get 25-1 at Bet Online. And we always like 25-1.
Right? Yes, we absolutely.
Will you be in attendance tomorrow, Dick?
I will not be in attendance. I don't want to say I'm boycotting, but
just sitting
I grew
it
up
out.
I grew up in Baltimore, like 4 miles from Pimlico. Mm-hmm. The Preakness not at Pimlico for me is not the same.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll be back next year. I'll watch this.
Tell me how doable this sports weekend would be. How far are you at Laurel? I know not far from you could go to the Orioles and Nationals in D.C. How far are you from Aronimink outside of Philly?
Yeah, where I live, I'm about 40 minutes from Aronimink. I live in the northern suburbs, and Aronimink is in the western suburbs, not far from Villanova University, in that general vicinity. So, and I've actually been there. Tiger Woods had his tournament there a couple of years ago, and when I was still at the paper, I covered it. And I also helped cover the U.S. Open when it was at Marion, which is also can't be 5 miles from Aronimink. It's in the same general vicinity in the western suburbs.
So Aronimink is exactly due opposite of where all the football, basketball, and baseball stadiums are.
Yeah, they're all in South Philly near the airport. Aronimink's probably, it's not that far, really maybe 25 or 30 minutes from the stadiums. So, yeah, in the western suburbs where all the stadiums are in South Philly right near the airport.
Well, that would be a good weekend. Yeah. Baseball tonight.
Oh, my.
Track tomorrow and final round of the PGA on Sunday. Second Jack Buck reference I've had today, he said the greatest thing about his life being an announcer was the track in the morning, the golf course in the afternoon, and the ballpark at night.
There you go. That's a trifecta, right?
It really is.
Might have been golf in the morning and track in the afternoon. Yeah.
Either way. Either way. All good.
Well, Dick, while we have you on, I got to sneak in a basketball question for you. Sure. Obviously, here in Memphis, a lot of people excited last Sunday getting the number 3 pick in the NBA draft. So the debate right now, a lot of people are having Cam Boozer or Caleb Wilson. What do you think of those two prospects?
Man, yeah, very different players. Caleb Wilson, obviously, the superior athlete. But no 3-point shooting at all. I mean, he's just not good at it, nor does he do it, but a ridiculous NBA athlete. Cam Boozer, I think people kind of slept on this. He's a plus 3-point shooter, very high IQ player, a little below the rim in comparison to like Wilson, but man, is the assumption that DeBanza and the kid from Kansas whose name is escaping me, they're going 1-2.
Yeah, that's what everyone feels, yeah.
Okay. And does Memphis have any other picks in the first round?
Oh, yeah, number 16.
Well, I'm telling you who they should pick at number 16. He's my favorite player in the draft. Bennett Sturts, the point guard from Iowa.
Yeah.
I love him. Somebody is going to get a gem. I'm not sure where he's rated, but I'm telling you he's going to be way better than wherever he's picked.
Dick, I promise you, in season I said about him that where – he probably will get drafted. He will go to a team that in 3 or 4 years will go, how did such a good team get such a good player?
Yeah, if somebody – look, I don't know who's willing to give him the ball. And he's a four-year player. He played 2 years in Division II, then won at Drake, and then won at Iowa. If somebody is willing to give him the ball early in his career, and he's ready right now, I think he's a major star. He's a plus shooter, like close to 40% three-point shooter. One of the smartest players I've ever watched, and he sees everything, and he's a better athlete than people think. So he's my favorite player in the draft, especially given where he's likely to be drafted.
And one thing I love about Boozer, I think I'll just give up if he's not dedicated to getting better every step of the way in his career with his upbringing. And, he cut his teeth in the NBA and around basketball. I think this is the least best he will ever be. I don't think we'll recognize him in 5 years.
Yeah, I think there's no downside to Boozer. He might not have, say, the upside of Wilson, who you just don't know because he's such an explosive athlete, and obviously the NBA is an athlete's league. But, yeah, you get Boozer, you're going to be real happy for like 12 years. He's going to be a starter, productive, borderline all-star player for as long as he's in the league.
All right, every time I've offered that up this week, I get this comeback that – And with the comparison to Duke, is he's going to be another Shane Battier. Well, he wasn't so bad. Shane Battier wasn't so bad as a pro, but it never maxed like we thought it would.
Shane Battier was a great defender in the pros, but he never had the offensive skills that this kid has.
Okay.
Boozer's a plus passer. He sees the game in slow motion. Again, he's not going to – his dad wasn't a great athlete. I mean, he was good. but he wasn't great comparison to some of these like amazing athletes you see in the NBA. But he knows how to play, and he can shoot threes. And guys at 6'8 or 6'9 that can shoot threes in this NBA, they're worth a fortune.
And if Memphis got your combo, got Boozer and Sturts, the term, he knows how to play, players gravitate to that. Oh, the locker room gravitates to that.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen with John Moran? I mean, that's the question. Yeah. Do we have any idea what the deal there is?
I don't think he'll be in a Grizzlies uniform.
If they can give him away.
So they're in the market for a point guard. Okay.
Yes, well, very much so.
Those are the guys to grow with. Find your team around those two if you can get them for the next 10 years, and then find some other guys that can figure out how to – and good luck trying to beat the Spurs and the Thunder anytime soon.
Yeah, that's our next 10 years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Dick, we're out of time, but next time we talk to you, we're going to have to talk more Iowa basketball because I cannot get enough of Ben McCollum, so I will be talking
about We will visit around the Belmont, and that'll be closer to the draft, so count us in. I'll let Jimmy know.
We'll do it.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, I know Sturts is at the Combine this week. I was asking one of my scouts. I haven't gotten a report yet how he's doing, but, yeah, I told him about him before he ever went there. He didn't tell him. I said, you're going to know him after Chicago.
Oh, yeah, shot the cover off the ball is what I heard from the Combine. So definitely a good call by you. But, Dick, as always, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Dick Girardi joining us, always a blast. And, yeah, I kind of had to bite my tongue there because if we had started talking Iowa basketball, we would have been here the rest of the show just talking Iowa basketball. I love Ben McCollum.
What was Boogie Flan thinking?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
You jog back on defense and don't turn your head around.
Yeah, makes no sense at all. But, yeah, we've talked a lot about Bennett Sturts. Not as great of a year this year as he had certainly at Drake last year. But I didn't get to see his shooting drills. I don't know if it was on ESPN when they were doing the coverage. But every person that I've read or listened to that was at the Combine were like, he could not miss in the shooting drills, which is exactly what I want to hear when it comes to Sturts. So he definitely will be a guy in that area at number 16. But let's go ahead and get to another break, and when we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day
at Sports 56 WHBQ.
Now, back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, my big number today, it comes from Major League Baseball. It is the number 16, and it has to do with J.J. Bleday, who is now with the Cincinnati Reds. He was with the Athletics last season, but the Athletics DFA'd him. He elected for free agency in the offseason. Cincinnati picked him up, but he started the season at Triple-A with the Louisville Bats, was called up on April 25th, and has been on an absolute tear with the Cincinnati Reds. Through his first 16 games with the Reds, Bleday has 18 RBI, 17 hits, 13 walks, 10 extra base hits, and 6 home runs. No other major league player has reached those marks over their first 16 games with a team since RBI became official in 1920. So, wow.
Modern era?
That is modern era.
Yeah,
1901,
yeah.
The start of the modern
that's
era.
The teeth
so,
of the modern
yeah, that's,
era.
I mean, you're old into the modern era at that point.
It's
I mean,
6 years
Lord.
Ago
yeah,
for
insane.
1920.
Insane.
That's a great big number.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
if the playoffs started today, Cleveland would be in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they would. It's insane what he's doing to start the season because
Cleveland Reds this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's a good series. But I think because I can't watch the Reds games because of the whole ordeal with television now.
So I get them.
Yeah, well, good. You're gonna have to keep me updated. So I'll watch the like condensed games afterwards and it was like a couple weeks ago, I'm watching it, and I was watching it, but it was kind of one of those things where I was doing something else while watching it.
Why is baseball so difficult?
I don't know. But it's all sports when it comes to the regions. But I hear them, Blade goes yard. I'm like, Blade? Is J.J. Blade? Yeah. I had no idea he's with the Reds, and he's been on an absolute tear with them.
My big number is 272. All 272 NFL regular season games are scheduled. Released last night. There will be some flex on start times. Already posted Dallas minus 2.5
All right.
at the Giants on Sunday Night Football.
All right.
That first Monday night, Kansas City minus 2.5 at home against Denver. Who you got? Let's do a little Friday football forecast now.
Give me the Cowboys minus 2.5 in that Sunday night game.
Give me Jackson Dart.
Wow.
Landon.
Wow.
I'll rock with the Cowboys.
Yeah, you will.
Kansas City laying the 2.5 Mahomes, will he be there?
That's a good
against
question.
Bo Nix? Can Bo Nix do it again?
I'll take Big Bad Bo.
I'll take Bo.
Yeah, I'm rocking with the Broncos.
Good block.
Wow.
In May on
good
Bo.
Block. How about that? Do we have a line for the Wednesday night game?
I didn't see it.
Let me see if there's a Wednesday night.
I was just getting
line
ready to ask for the compliment of having the schedule covered, and then I don't know it.
No, you believe me. You compared to me, you absolutely nailed the schedule reveal because I did not know a thing about it other than what I kind of heard in passing different places. New England and Seattle. That's the quirky Wednesday night game, right?
Yeah.
Seattle, 3.5-point favorite over the Patriots in the Super Bowl rematch.
Let's hope Drake May shows this time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Some were wondering if he was really at Super Bowl 60.
Yeah. I'll take the Patriots. You know what they always say? Take the dog on a Wednesday in the NFL.
They do.
That's what they say.
That's what they always say.
That's exactly what they
say. So we've got NFL games on every day of the week except for a Tuesday this year.
That's right. That's right. So, got it covered.
When will they do that?
Well, I'm sure probably soon. Getting the Wednesday game in there, I'm sure.
It'll draw.
No, it absolutely will draw. Again, like they could play a game at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it would absolutely draw.
On the 10th of August.
Yes. The Shield, it has that sort of power. But let's go ahead, wrap up this second hour, get to a break. When we return, Dan Reardon from KMOX, he's going to join us as round 2 of the PGA Championship slowly coming to an end. We'll talk about everything that's happened over these first 2 games. We'll be a little shorter with Dan. We'll get to an early Moe's crunch time again. Ole Miss baseball first pitch against Alabama tonight, scheduled for 6 o'clock. We'll get you over for the pregame show at 5:30. But let's get to a break. When we return, golf talk with Dan Reardon.